Chances are you are in debt. Most Americans owe on their credit cards, home mortgages, student loans. Student loan debt is growing rapidly and now totals more than total credit card debt and may pose serious consequences for the economy. That's the gist of a new report issued by the Federal Reserve Bank here in St. Louis. It examines debt issues in this part of the country, focusing on the implications of that debt. Joining me in studio is Lowell Ricketts, senior analyst with the Center for Household Financial Stability at the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Don.
Everybody is in debt to some degree or another.
Yes. not everyone, but many Americans do have debt holdings.
Give me a sense, an overall sense of what your findings were in this report that you've issued.
Well, we took a historical perspective for the nation and the region that comprises the 8th District. We found that during the recession, we saw a run-up in debt holdings, which primarily was mortgage balances. Mm-hmm. And then after the recession hit, the housing crash, debt came down. Many Americans were either shedding their debt or paying it down up until pretty much 2013, where it kind of stabilized and debt levels held about steady. And since then, we've been seeing growth. And most of it, the vast majority, is comprised by auto debt and student debt.
Student debt is what everybody's talking about these days. I mean, it's just when you think of in terms of its being more than the total credit card debt.
Yes.
It's really staggering to think what these young people are getting into.
It's true. And it behaved very differently in the recession, in the fact that deleveraging period where people were paying down their debt, that wasn't reflected by student loans. Every other debt type came down, but student loans continued its steady march upwards.
Before we continue our conversation on some of the other things, we did an interview earlier today with Joey Khoury, a SLU graduate and now a graduate student at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore and Washington. He also has a part-time job on Capitol Hill, by the way. He's got a full plate. A little over 2 years ago, he was on this program talking about the burden of student debt. And I asked him during a telephone conversation earlier today what kind of debt he's looking at.
With my student loans, currently right now, I have accumulated about $62,000 in debt. When I graduate, I'm looking at $80,000 right away. But when you look at the grand scheme of things in the long term, looking at interest and things like that, you know, it could rack up between $95,000 to $150,000, depending on how soon I can pay that off.
Well, how long do you expect it will take you?
Well, I want to get it done right away. So I'm expecting, so far, the current estimates of my student loan provider says that I can get it paid off in full on time about 2029. It can go as late until 2044.
That doesn't sound like right away to me.
Well, you got to take it in small bites.
My impression from what I've heard about you, Joey, is that fact that because this debt is so high that you're derailing plans to get your PhD.
Yeah, you know, if an employer would pay for it, I'd be more than happy to. But if PhD would add, you know, maybe upwards to $50,000-$60,000 more. So it's definitely a hard choice to make. I would love to get a PhD, but I also have to be fiscally responsible as well.
Well, you are, after all, getting a degree in what, applied economics? So I guess that might help you figure this out.
Yes.
How does it affect your plans for such things, Joey, as marriage and buying a home and buying a car and buying the things that most young people starting in life would like to do?
It most definitely pushes it off. I mean, I'd like to have a family one day, but if I can't provide for them, I definitely don't want to put my future spouse or children in a situation in which they would be worse off because of my debt. So it definitely pushes things off. I said earlier that the latest I can pay in full is 2044, so I'd be 51 years old at that time. And just when I'm done paying off my student loans, I hope to be paying for my children's student loans. So it's definitely a great weight, and I do not want to put any more undue burden on my future family.
And yet, as I understand it, you are looking at it rather philosophically, and the debt that you are accruing right now is an investment in your future.
Getting a graduate degree is a great thing. Almost all studies in economics show that even getting a bachelor's degree increases your future income significantly, and of course, with a graduate degree, even more. So even though I'm taking on a lot of debt, I still believe that my future earnings throughout my whole lifetime would offset that debt. So it looks staggering right now, but when you take in term the long term, I still believe I come out ahead.
No regrets?
Not at all.
All righty. Well, we wish you the very best, Joey. You're taking on an awful lot, but obviously you've got your head on straight and know what you're doing.
I love a good challenge, so it's definitely there for me for many years.
Back now to our conversation with Lowell Ricketts of the St. Louis Fed. Lowell, you were sitting there and alternatively shaking your head in affirmative, agreeing with him, and also shaking your head in the negative, saying, my God, this guy's got a huge debt problem.
Absolutely. Right now, the average debt balance for a borrower of student loans is somewhere around $30,000. And that includes that's all 25 to 34-year-olds. And that includes graduate students like Joey. So Joey has debt that surpasses that by a wide margin. And yet Joey is investing in a good program. He's got pursuing an education that will likely be very successful in the job market. But the debt remains what it is. It's a huge sum of money that, as he projected, will take a large portion of his lifetime to pay off. And during that time, it will likely inhibit many activities such as saving for retirement, purchasing the house, if he wanted to start a small business. All of this gets delayed or even derailed.
And what does this potentially do to our economy?
It presents a headwind to economic growth. Much of the activities like buying a home or starting a small business feeds into the consumption component of real GDP growth. And if it's a headwind to that, it will lower national economic growth. And that's obviously a big negative.
Do we have a number of how many young people are out there today that are carrying the average $30,000 a year in debt, or $30,000 in debt?
I don't have a specific number, but I can give you a sense of in the St. Louis area, we have 19% of all individuals who are borrowing for student loans.
19%. Mm-hmm. How does the Midwest shape up vis-a-vis other parts of the country?
Well, specific to St. Louis has a higher share of people, slightly higher. The national rate of borrowing is 17% of individuals. And in the St. Louis region, we actually have a higher average debt total, something along the magnitude of $3,000 more in average debt.
Why would that be?
It's hard to say. It could be you can't pinpoint it on the local universities because these are all people who likely a large portion of them attended institutions outside of St. Louis. But it does say that in our region, we are investing more in higher education.
You know, getting back to the impact on the economy, does it represent a threat to our economy? I mean, obviously, anything that damages the economy is not good, but is it massive enough to destabilize it somehow?
I'm not sure if it could. We can say for certain what the implications are. It's certainly not good. When we look at the serious delinquency rate, which is the share of the outstanding balance for which payments are over 3 months past due, and what we can say about that is it's 12% of the total balance, and that equates to a lot of financial hardship for individuals. And that's going to hurt economic growth. Is it something that is on par with what we saw in the housing crash? I don't think we can say that. Obviously, mortgage lending is a much greater share of total debt than student loans.
But that, I guess I would call it, is healthy debt, as would auto loans be healthy debt, at least from the economy standpoint, because people are buying cars and buying homes, which causes homes to be built and cars to be built, and that's good.
Well, it's tough to kind of identify what is healthy debt and what is unhealthy debt. You kind of have to take into account what the capabilities of the borrower is in terms of income to be able to make the payments on that, and how that investment will pay out. For houses, obviously, some of those mortgages turned out to be a poor investment, and it's difficult to assess exactly what is good debt and what is bad debt.
What about, you mentioned delinquency a moment ago. What is the delinquency ratio, if there is such a thing, or what are the penalties for delinquency in any of these areas?
Well, student loans have the highest serious delinquency rate. Credit cards come next with about a 7% rate. And that's pretty astonishing because for much of the historical period that we're looking at, back to 2003, credit cards had much higher serious delinquency rates. And that's alarming. And if anything, that 12% is actually an understatement because there are a large share of loans that are in forbearance, deferment, or in a grace period and not currently in the repayment cycle. So that means there are likely more borrowers within that group that may fall behind on their loans.
On the other hand, I'll say this again, and you can certainly challenge it and would, I'm sure. Credit cards are good. Credit card debt is good because people are using them to buy things.
Certainly, credit cards, when used with respect to their implications on the interest rates and all that, are an important tool by which we finance much of our purchases. And yes, many of those are good. I don't think we can actually look at student loans as not also being a good thing. Mm-hmm. Certainly, by taking out student loans, a borrower is investing in their future in the hopes that they can have a rewarding career and a lifetime of opportunity after that. And we've certainly found that college education does pay. Over the past 20 years, the expected earnings of a college graduate has increased, while non-college graduates has stayed the same and started to decline. So a college education is more important than ever, but the numbers here are certainly adding up to raising the stakes on getting that job, on financing the education with affordable loans.
Is this an issue about which you and the Federal Reserve Bank are concerned? Or is it an exercise for you to figure out what's going on, or is there a real element of concern here?
Well, certainly it's concerning to see the serious delinquency rate as high as it is. Yeah. As for whether or not the Fed has anything to weigh in on this, I can't say. Yeah. But what we're trying to do here in this publication, as well as the upcoming quarterly debt monitor, is inform policymakers and the public with where these rates are at so that they can have a clear picture of where Americans are with respect to their liabilities.
Do you have any sense of what kind of tools should be available out there, but that policymakers should be considering to deal with this?
I don't have any specific policy recommendations. I know in August of 2013, income-based repayment plans were announced in which they adjust your monthly payment on your student debt to 10% of your discretionary income. And that's, in theory, a great way to try and alleviate some of the pressure that a lump sum payment would have on some of the borrowers.
Yeah. We have a little time. I'd like to open up our phone lines. If folks have questions they'd like to put forth with regard to this whole issue of debt, please give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or we'll take a tweet at STL on air. What other findings that we haven't talked about did you come up with in your report, Lowell?
Well, we find that opposite of student loans, that we have auto debt. And the way that new auto debt has been distributed has been to older cohorts. I think it was around 60% of the new debt is has been created by folks who are over 55. So you have kind of a difference in the allocation of the new debt, where student loans, of course, are younger groups, and auto debt is an older group of borrowers typically. And so that has implications for the financial stability of older Americans. Typically, they can meet the payments, and it shows up as such as the serious delinquency rates for auto loans is much lower.
And yet older Americans have more disposable income available.
It's true.
So they should be able to handle it better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What about other areas? I mean, that's something that's probably not going to change with regard to the auto loans. What other areas have you found?
Well, one interesting thing about credit card delinquency rates is we are now at a rate that is lower than the pre-recession. So it appears that a number of Americans actually shed credit card accounts, paid down their debt, and it appears that currently the borrowers are having a better time managing those debt.
The recession really is a major signpost in all of this, isn't it? I mean, it mm-hmm. obviously had a tremendous impact and influence on the economy.
Absolutely. And our center studies specifically household balance sheets, and it's important to look at the household balance sheet because so much of the factors associated with savings and assets are related to outcomes like upward mobility, financial stability. And what we saw in the Great Recession truly can be considered as a balance sheet-based recession in which the home ownership and the mortgage asset side of the balance sheet really took a hit, and that cascaded through the rest of the economy.
Is that and where are we now with that? Is it rebounding?
Well, mortgage lending is mostly stable. We haven't seen the growth or deleveraging that was characteristic of the recession.
Let's take a call. We have Matt wants to join the conversation. We'll bring him in. He's calling from Afton. Matt, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
Hey, quick question for you. After divorce and a job loss, and I guess I feel like I'm a little in over my head in terms of debt, can you guys compare some of the options like credit repair versus consolidation versus bankruptcy and those types of other options? Then I can take my answer off the air.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, I can't weigh in on that. I'm not a certified financial planner, and I would recommend that Matt seek someone who can kind of weigh those different options and look into that.
Yeah, obviously you can't speak for the Fed, and that is not your position. Is this report going to be followed up subsequently by a similar kind of survey, if you will, to see where it is?
Yes. In April, we're shooting to release a bigger report that's going to have all of these statistics across a broad geographic area. We're going to look at the St. Louis MSA as well as Louisville, Memphis, and Little Rock. We're going to compare trends to the nation, and we're really going to take a deeper dive in this data and provide it on a recurring basis so everyone can keep track of this and monitor these trends over time.
Same sort of thing being done in other parts of the country by other district feds?
Yes. Several of the other districts, the New York Fed, I believe the Dallas Fed, is also preparing a similar report for their region. This is a unique data set to the Federal Reserve System. It's data that is provided by Equifax and processed by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. It's a powerful data set. It allows us to actually track individuals over time, and that's huge in terms of studying the outcomes associated with these debt levels.
You spoke a little earlier about getting this information available to policymakers, government officials, I suppose you mean. How do you do that?
Well, we look to release the report through all channels available. And, listen also to the reception it receives from individuals in our region as well as policymakers. If they have specific questions associated with this data, we would be happy to assist in providing more data.
Have you – I know this report is brand new, but have you had any kind of feedback at all from area policymakers, if you will, or those who would be interested in this?
Not as of yet, but the report just came out today. And so
I thought it was out at least a couple of days. my fault on that.
It's all right.
So it'll be programs like this that will get the information out to them. Is there a formal process for getting information to them?
We have a formal written report is available on the St. Louis Fed's website, as well as that of my center, the Center for Household Financial Stability. So you can find it there. Otherwise, it's available. I think it's been covered by the Post-Dispatch today, as well as other media entities.
Well, we'll certainly put a link to those sources of information on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Just a few seconds left, but was there a big surprise to you in going over these findings?
I think the big surprise was the serious delinquency rate for student loans and just how that has continually increased over the time period and the ramifications for that, since most student loans, you can't shed them in personal bankruptcy. Mm. So what are the implications for these individuals who are saddled with balances that they can't meet the payments for? How do you, unlike in the recession where you could shed some of that debt and rebuild, how do these individuals at the outset of their lives deal with that? And I think it's a big question and a big problem.
And the residual effect obviously being if they're not buying that car or buying that house, it does have an impact in some way on the U.S. economy.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being with us, Lowell Ricketts of the St. Louis Fed. Interesting conversation. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. It's a production of St. Louis Public Radio. I thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.